Life and Music of John Field by Mark Ivan O'Gorman.
The 1830s, when Field came back, Field was coming up against the likes of Chopin and Liszt. So John Field, who had been the foremost pianist of his era, but that era would have been the early 19th century, was just old-fashioned. So when he returned and did his concerts in the 1830s, they were greeted with tepid reception. Field was really disheartened by this.
I think personal circumstances probably come to play here. I mean, he definitely had a drink problem in the latter part of his life. And I think that probably brought on all the illness as well that he suffered from. He was known as Drunken John, which was very sad. And there was that period from about 1823 for a period of 9 or 10 years that he wrote almost nothing. I would say that was a time when he was, I think he was probably a very sad, lonely character, you know?
Hello? Who is it?
Master Clementi, it is I, your favorite student, John Field.
John, the Tsar of Russia. Can it be you? Come in. And who is this with you?
This is my student, Leonov.
Good evening.
Welcome, Leonov. Come in, gentlemen. Come, sit. They're here, Emma. Let me take a look at you, John. My word. I would not have recognized you.
You're not the only one. My own mother refused to believe it was me.
It's been so long. How is she?
She's not good. That's why I'm here. That and my own help. Moscow, as you know, has many fine people, but a decent doctor is not among them.
I'm sorry to hear that. Your health would not by any chance be due to your overdoing it, would it?
I thought you'd never ask. Mine is a cognac and Leonov is not particular.
Leonov, I hope you pick up only the graceful playing style of your teacher and none of his bad habits.
You shouldn't mind all that Drunken John nonsense. The Russian press are far too influenced by Lord Byron, in my estimation.
I'm glad to hear it. Do you remember a story you told me once about your grandfather counseling you on the benefits of moderation?
Leonov, these old men dispense advice like snuff at a wake. Meanwhile, my 2-day journey from London has left my mouth unpleasantly dry.
Very well. Emma! Where is that woman?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am sorry for not greeting you at the door. This must be the famous John Field.
Infamous John Field, if you believe what you read. Delighted to meet you, Emma. This is Leonov, a gifted tenor from Russia who was accompanying me on my tour of Europe.
I am sure it will be a great success. Despite your lengthy absence, your name has never faded.
You're very kind, but you cannot have been born when I last played in England.
Emma, please bring the men something to drink.
Yes, of course.
A tour of Europe. How exciting. Leonov, what age are you?
I'm 17.
Ha! The same age as John when I brought him on our adventure across the continent.
Only to land me in the frigid wastes of Russia to flog your pianos.
Frigid? I seem to remember you received a rather warm welcome there, particularly from a coterie of your female students.
Muccio, I'm starting to think the years have affected your memory. The only thing I had to survive the St. Petersburg winters in those days was the warming effect of wine, and it bears me up to this day.
Our winters are long and cold, Mr. Clementi. We drink because we must.
Thank you, Emma. Well, you're in England now, where we drink because we want to. To your health. You have concerts arranged in London, I hope.
Yes, I have made inquiries, but I'll be honest, the response has been muted.
You've grown accustomed to the unstinting adoration of your Russian gentry. The London audience is demanding and insatiable for the novel.
And impressed by vulgar flamboyance and shameless peacocking.
Gone are the days of the salon, John. You need to move with the times. The fashion is great concert halls for the hoi polloi.
I'm sorry I can't provide crash, bang, wallop.
It's not all bombast. There's a young player who's doing something new and very interesting. He's taking the country by storm.
Please don't tell me about this Pole they're raving about in Paris.
No, no, I'm talking about another pianist here in England, a friend of one of my other students, Michelis.
Are you all right, Muzio? Leonov, pass him some water.
I'm fine, this happens. I'll retire momentarily. Excuse me, we will talk more after I rest. I will arrange for you to meet Michelis. He's the best man to promote your concerts in London. Excuse me.
Look at that man, Leonov. As a child, I came to him and he taught me and guided me. 30 years later, he's still doing so. A poor reflection on me, maybe. I'm sorry I didn't tell him you were my son. He was so quick to criticize my wayward behavior. I couldn't reveal you were my child with a woman who was not my wife. It seems I am still his ward and he is my master. It makes me wonder, in the intervening time, have I grown in any way?
Deborah Kelleher, director, Royal Irish Academy of Music. Well, Muzio Clementi was a hugely influential figure in Field's life. I mean, he gave him his career. Field was apprenticed to Muzio Clementi in the very early part of the 19th century. And he was essentially supposed to promote Clementi's pianos. And through that, Field was able to perform all over Europe and also to premiere his works, because at the time you weren't really a famous performer unless you were also a good composer. So people were performing their own works. Towards the end of the 19th century, this idea of performer-composer was replaced by performer-interpreter. But in Field's time, the fact that he could compose concertos, all of that was important.
My name is Una Hunt. I have had a lifelong interest in the music of Ireland, and especially a figure like Field. Clementi was a very important character at the time. He was a very well-known pianist, a very well-respected teacher. So he was quite an important figure from a lot of different aspects, you know. He was a publisher as well, of course. He published a lot of music. So he really had his finger in a lot of pies.
Mr. Field, please come in. Take a seat.
I'll stand if you don't mind.
Ah, yes. Your condition.
My condition has not been helped by your colleague's attempted cure. Caustic potash applied to the posterior strikes me as a particularly British solution to the problem.
I'd thank you not to compare me to some backstreet barber. I am a surgeon of some reputation.
Yes, yes, I am all too aware of your exorbitant fees. But my hemorrhoidal issues are only part of the problem. I have recently been in general ill health and feeling most unwell.
Mr. Field, you have cancer. I shall operate, and that will resolve the immediate problem. But I suspect this malaise is due to your lifestyle, is it not?
I notice one thing that hasn't changed during my decades of absence from England. A sanctimonious attitude to pleasure.
Sir, I have read on more than one occasion that you were, in fact, dead.
Not dead, merely living in Russia.
Surely, the speed at which these rumors spread point to a man not overly concerned with his health.
Dr. Cooper, I had a wife who was a specialist in this therapeutic approach, and yet here we are.
Very well.
I have a son who requires money for his education, an ailing mother with medical expenses, and a reputation to bolster. I need to play concerts, and I need to be in the whole of my health to play them. Are you the man to provide the service I require?
I am.
My name's Angela Boland. I'm a 19th century musicologist with a specialism in John Field. The press is something that I think people don't realise really shaped Field, and sometimes in a negative way. So a lot of the things we think about Field now, that Field, when he went back to Paris in 1832 and to London, that people were saying he was old-fashioned. But people forget that the nature of reviews changed significantly throughout the 19th century. So at the end of the 18th century, when Field performed in Dublin, it would have been more of a factual report. Really, it's the 1830s that you start to see more detailed reviews. There's also something that circulates in the 19th century British press that Field boasts about giving lessons from his bed in an adjoining room to his students. this is interpreted in two ways. One is he's so busy, this is what he has to do, that it's the only way he can get some rest is by giving lessons from bed. But then the other one is that he's so lazy, he just like, I know I can get whoever I want. So it really depends how you interpret it. This story, though, comes from Moscheles' diaries. He was very aware of posterity. He would have seen potentially Field as a threat. He met Field on Field's return in London, and he claims that this is Field was obnoxious and boasting.
He went to Russia in 1800. So for 30-odd years, he was really buried in Russia. Now, I know that sounds strange because, of course, he was revered all over Europe by the people who knew, by the great teachers, etc. You know, I mean, even Chopin's teacher, Joseph Elsner, revered Field. He thought he was the greatest pianist living. But, in fact, he had been missing from the Central European scene. There was a new broom sweeping Europe at that time, which was this sort of thunder and lightning type of piano player. There was virtuosi, thousands of virtuosi turned up in Paris, for instance, each vying with one another to see who could play faster and louder than the other. And it was all dramatic stuff, pyrotechnics. The developing piano had a lot to do with that. Field was able to exploit those developments at the beginning of the piano. But by the 1830s, which was considered to be the golden age of the piano, I think he was probably out of date.
Well done, Mr. Field. A triumph. Your playing recalls the great Clementi in his day.
That is a compliment, particularly here at the Philharmonic Society, a testament to his vision. I tell you, a reception like tonight's makes me question why I ever left.
It is because of Clementi that I am here, in fact. I'm Ignaz Moscheles. Master Clementi said we should meet.
Oh, Moscheles. Thank you for coming. A pleasure to meet a fellow Clementi student.
We share another tutor also, Albrecht Berger.
Don't remind me of Vienna. A short but brutal season of counterpoint which only hastened my flight to Russia.
Forgive me, but for all your years in Russia, you have no accent.
As I tell them there, my accent was set during my formative years in the town of Dublinsk.
Let me introduce you to my companion, Felix. This is John Field.
I enjoyed the concert. Very good. Sounded like Chopin.
Sounded like Chopin? Moscheles, I believe you were close to Beethoven. Tell me, do you exclusively keep the company of the deaf?
I beg your pardon?
Is it catching? This stripling here is comparing me to his peer, a boy who has yet to even play in this country. If anything, this Chopin must sound like me.
I meant it only as a compliment. Chopin is very fashionable.
You see? It is a good thing. He means your style is what the public want these days. And he should know, he is a most gifted pianist. I am his teacher, but I confess I have very little to teach him.
Perhaps some manners? Clementi would have caned me if I spoke like that at his age.
Young people say what is on their mind. You must forgive him. He meant nothing by it. You would forgive him all if you heard him play. This is Felix Mendelssohn. Goethe thinks he's better than Mozart.
Goethe? What would that idiot know?
What? Goethe is the greatest man of letters.
I'm joking. Come on, Moscheles, let's get a drink. No wonder tempers are starting to flare. I've been off the stage for what seems like an age. And my stomach is beginning to think my throat is cut.
You Irish are fond of drinking.
Master Field, have you a moment? I need to speak with you.
Leonov, come with us. We were about to repair to a convenient tavern to continue our conversation.
It's rather serious.
What is it?
Clementi has died.
Oh, dear. This is terrible news. I must see how Emma and the children are. Gentlemen, please excuse us. Felix, let us go.
Good night.
Oh, what a man. Nothing can afford a more glaring contrast than a Field nocturne and Field's manners.
It is as if death is encircling me. My mother poorly, Clementi gone, and my own health. Night is falling, Leonov, and I ask myself, What have I done with my day?
He was born in 1782. This isn't a rags-to-riches story because he was born into a Protestant Irish family. Not a wealthy family, but a skilled family of musicians. His father, Robert Field, was a violinist and he worked in the churches and also in the courts. His grandfather, John Field, also was a professional organist. Originally, John Field was taught by his grandfather, so this was a musical family. But not only that, it was a musical family in a city that was prosperous. Dublin in 1782 was the second city of the British Isles. So you had a parliament here. You had ministers, MPs, individuals that wanted to be entertained. You had the court of Dublin Castle. You had two big churches, St. Patrick's Church and Christ Church Cathedral. You had other gems like St. Werburgh's, where the Field family would have been associated with. This is a young chap in a prosperous Georgian city whose parents could identify that he had a gift and could bring that gift forward.
Stop, stop, stop. What are you doing? It's not a race. And why are you hitting the keys so hard?
Grandad, why am I practicing all the time if it's not to get faster?
Just because you can play faster doesn't mean you have to play faster. Playing music is like life. Sometimes you need to slow down and be gentle. You can't attack things with a wild passion all the time.
I just want to be good. I want to be a famous musician like you and Father.
I know you do, but look at this instrument in front of you. What do you notice?
It's brand new.
It's not one bit new. This organ is very old. It's just been restored. The greatest composer of all time, George Frederick Handel, practiced on this organ before he performed his greatest work. Just around the corner in Fishamble Street.
Messiah?
Messiah is right. And you are crucifying it all over again. But look, see the way the keys are both black and white. Do you see what I'm saying? It can't be all fast, fast, and it's not all slow, slow either. It has to be a balance. That's how you should approach your life. And that's how you make an instrument sing. Now, let's start again. And this time, please don't make poor old Georgie turn over in his grave, battering away on the keys like you're being chased by the devil.
I'm hearing an awful lot of talk going on, and not too much playing.
Father!
Hello, Robert. What are you dropping into St. Werburgh's in the middle of the day?
Do you want to hear my new piece?
No time for that, I'm afraid, son. Come with me. Someone very important wants to see you.
What's going on? He's in the middle of practice.
We're not going far. I'll explain later.
My name is David Mooney. I'm head of keyboard studies at the DIT Conservatory of Music and Drama. This is what surprises people all the time, the fact that there was so much musical activity going on. We had lots of concert venues, lots of concerts, and the import of productions from the UK, particularly from London. So a very active music scene with seemingly very healthy audience numbers. The audience would not have been your ordinary Dubliner, but certainly the Anglo-aristocratic type of audience. It's important to recognise that a lot of the concerts that were put on, we'd say in terms of benefit concerts, would have been for your commoner, and certainly the proceeds were intended for the poor of Dublin. The piano would have been extremely important already in the upper-class homes, and there were lots of very, very fine piano teachers in Dublin at this time, mostly not Irish people. There might have been Italians, Germans, you know, people who settled here and were working as musicians. It was very much a luxury in the 19th century, but it was a luxury that a lot of people had, and even middle-class people aspired to having piano education for their children, particularly for girls, actually, because it was seen to be an advantageous thing in marriage, you know, to be well-versed in some musical instrument, and piano was often a fairly obvious one because you could sing and play at the same time.
My name is Turtlebunbury, and I'm a historian and an author. The Dublin of John Field's childhood, absolute bastion for the ascendancy. They spend their springs and summers out in the countryside in their magnificent piles, but then they all flock to Dublin, particularly for the season, that six-week period when Dublin Castle hosts all the aristocracy and landed gentry. Dublin is also the biggest building site in Europe at that time, and what you have is the conversion of what had been a medieval town of narrow alleys and so on. Builders are hard at work producing some of the most iconic buildings still to this day in Dublin, the Four Courts, the Custom House and so on. All of that is happening, and Dublin is changing rapidly from, as I say, this medieval town into a proper modern European city.
For goodness sake, John, stop dragging your heels.
Where are we going?
I told you, Smock Alley to the Theatre Royal.
The Theatre Royal. Who's there that wants to see me?
A very famous teacher. You're a lucky boy, John.
But Grandfather teaches me.
He spoils you, spending all day with idle talk.
He said it was important not to have too much of one thing, and that you must have balance.
John, Grandfather is retired. He has all day, every day, to spin yarns about what one ought to do. But he has no idea what it's like to be a professional musician in this day and age. And it's going to be worse by the time you're trying to make your way. Now, do you want to be a pianist?
Yes, Father.
Good. Balance my eye. Come along. We cannot keep the finest pianist in Ireland waiting.
Pulling my arm.
Oh, look a little lively and stop whining. It is most unbecoming of a student of the musical director of the Theatre Royal, Signore Tommaso Giordani.
My name is Conor Byrne, and I'm the events manager here at Smock Alley Theatre, where the theatre actually gets its name from nowadays, Smock Alley. Smock is a lady's undergarment, and there was a lot of brothels in the area. Theatre and music played a very big part in most people's lives at that time. Nowadays, obviously, when you come to the theatre, you see one play and one play only. But back then, you would arrive and you could be here for up to 6 hours. Giordani would have been well known. His name alone would have drawn a huge amount of people. He would have had his own performances to do directly for the audience, where there wouldn't have been actors or it wouldn't be background music. He also accompanied dancers that would appear on stage, acrobats, jugglers, all those sorts of things. Music was very integral to a night at the theatre back then.
Grazie, grazie, thank you. And so concludes Giordani's, that's me, spring spiritual concert here in the beautiful round room at the Rotunda. And please show your appreciation once more for 10-year-old John Field on his debut.
Signore Giordani, how was it? Was my playing good?
Your playing was very good, but this crowd is so small. What must I do to get the audience? And with Theatre Royal no more, I have no luck.
Mr. Giordani, congratulations. What a wonderful concert. And finally, we get to hear the much talked about and much admired Master Field.
Yes, he is a good boy. He played well tonight. Dussek is not so easy to master.
I thought he was wonderful. In fact, I am planning to write a review of his performance in the Dublin Evening Post. Would you like to hear what I'm going to say?
Sì, certo.
An astonishing performance by such a child, and had a precision and execution far beyond what could have been expected.
Praise indeed. I wish I received reviews that glowing. Hello, I'm Robert Field, the performer's father. Pleased to meet you.
Delighted. You must be very proud. Now, do excuse me. I shall take my leave of you. Well done, John. It was a privilege to witness genius in its embryonic form. You will have a remarkable career.
Did you hear that, Father? What does embryonic mean?
It means you need to practice more.
I think he was a very good. For a first public show, to get a review like this, it is not bad. He has worked hard, and I have worked hard with him. Roberto, I will tell you, he is one of the best students I ever have.
Best student you had?
Scusi?
I'm moving the family out of Dublin. There's just not enough work for me here.
And John?
That's the thing. Thanks to your recommendation, he's been accepted as a student of Muzio Clementi.
Who's Muzio Clementi?
They call Clementi Mr. Piano. For piano, he is the most important man in the world.
That's right. So there's no time to lose. We must pack your things and have you on your way. Thank you, Signore Giordani. Thank you for everything.
Fantastico. First I lose my theater, and now I lose my best student. Oof.
Being a prodigy was, I mean, we still like the fact that there are prodigies and everyone's amazed when somebody can do something at a very young age. But this was something you see throughout, in particular the 19th century, the Mozart's children being another example. He was a pupil of Tommaso Giordani, and Giordani had a concert and chose to include one of his students, in this case, Field. In Dublin, at the end of the 18th century, it was cosmopolitan in many ways. So you had many foreign nationals who were were here as part of the music scene, so I don't think it was unusual that Giordani was here.
Muzio Clementi, in the modern era, would be known as a good second-tier composer. A composer of very useful and not very deep or, dare I say, important music. Clementi's works wouldn't have great depth of passion or anything like that. He was a very agile and notable pianist, and his best music is his piano music. But he also sold pianos, so he was a good businessman. And he understood that how you sell pianos is by having a group of agents who are performer composers that go around and show off the piano wares and, you know, communicate with potential buyers. For this, Clementi had a pretty massive business. So Field was one of his proteges, possibly his most successful. I mean, at the time, Field was the most noted performer of his generation, a noted virtuoso, not in the style of Liszt and Chopin, who were to come with staggering technique, but virtuosity at this time had a more kind of intimate feel to it.
Can I stop for 2 minutes?
What? Why?
My hands hurt.
Your hands do not hurt. What is wrong with you, boy?
I've been playing for hours. Can we not take a break and get some Pontefract cakes? I always play much better after eating licorice.
Yes, you can get some licorice, but not now. You must continue practicing. I do not wish to receive another letter of complaint from your father telling me that he's being overcharged and you're being underworked.
But I've played this piece 10,000 times.
John, a good player practices until he can get it right. A great player practices so he cannot get it wrong. John, you must listen to me. This next concert is very important for both of us.
Why is it important to you? It's my London debut.
Because it is Covent Garden and all of London society will be there. You are my star student and so my reputation hangs on your narrow shoulders.
But why did you announce that it was your 10-year-old student making his debut? I'm 12.
It's what's known as the art of promotion, my dear boy. I've been in the piano business long enough to know that a gifted 12-year-old will draw a crowd. But a gifted 10-year-old will astonish them.
But it's not true.
John, you're not in Dublin anymore. You're in the largest city in the world. If you want to ignite the popular imagination, we must create a sensation. Do you know Haydn will be in the audience?
Really?
Yes, John, and many, many potential students. So if you do well, I do well. And if I do well, your father's bill is greatly reduced. On that note, resume your practice.
Yes, Master Clementi.
John Field had 31 performances in London that we know of. The concerto was what people performed in public. It was necessary, so all musicians had to perform concertos, and that's why it's such an important genre. His own concerto, the first concerto, is what he would have performed in Covent Garden and actually mostly. When you look at reviews, it's interesting because you will often find people say a new concerto, but it wasn't new. It could have been performed over a 3-year period. It would have been the same concerto, and they will advertise it as new because it was, again, another marketing technique. It's normal at this time that teenagers, or you know, you could say teenagers, but late teens in this case, they would be performing and writing their own works because they were brought up with this. So their apprenticeship, it's not like going to school now and doing a leaving certificate. Their apprenticeship was music. So he's like 10 when he meets Clementi. So he's not out of the ordinary in that regard.
Me insane.
What's going on?
Melodic inversion, retrograde inversion, melodic inversion. Over and over and over again like an automaton.
John, please keep your voice down. You're a very lucky young man who is studying with the world's leading contrapuntist. And you choose to carp and whinge.
Is this the European tour you promised me? Come to Vienna and do counterpoint exercises until I go cross-eyed?
Herr Albrechtsberger has taught Beethoven and Mozart. But he's too dull for young John Field.
I'm 20 years old, Muzio, and people are already saying I am the greatest pianist of my generation. Yet you have me locked up in a garret with my face thrust in a book. I should be playing concerts.
The rumour that you're the greatest pianist of your generation was spread by me, and I'm telling you to practice your counterpoint.
Not just by you. They loved me in Paris. I was a bloody sensation. I was getting my portrait painted in London before we left.
You're not as good as you might be. If you had an ounce more diligence, you could be great.
He displayed great powers and sweetness and shading in his playing. Here's another notice. John Field is esteemed the finest performer in the kingdom. Nothing there about needing to brush up on my counterpoint theory.
Do you not see the opportunity you have here?
I know you've made some good money off me over the years, but my apprenticeship is up. We are partners now. So I need to have a say in what I, or rather, what we do.
So what is it you want?
Where are you going next week?
St. Petersburg.
Take me with you.
I'm going to sell my pianos. Is that what you want to do?
If I have to. But we know they are screaming out for music there, and they have the money to pay for it. You bring me to St. Petersburg, and I guarantee I'll be as wealthy as you in a year.
John, if you would only have a little patience and persistence, you could be the greatest pianist in Europe.
If you take me now, I will be the greatest pianist in Russia.
My cat could be the greatest pianist in Russia for the simple reason there are no pianists in Russia.
I'm begging you. I have been studying since I could walk, and all I want to do is at some point enjoy the benefits of this endless drudgery.
Endless drudgery?
Just bring me. If it isn't a success, I can always come back. Albrechtsberger isn't going anywhere. He's already as old as Methuselah. I'm sure he'll be here in another 900 years.
You have no idea what this journey entails.
Travel doesn't bother me.
And you will definitely not like winter in Russia. It differs greatly from summer in Paris.
Whatever it is, I'm ready for it.
It's amazing to me how much in touch Field was with everybody that was major in music at the time. Albrechtsberger is probably most famous for being Beethoven's orchestration teacher. And you see the influence of Albrechtsberger in John Field's works, particularly his concertos, because the orchestration is very innovative. How he uses timpani, how he uses the colour of the strings is truly inspirational and innovative. And he could do that because he had the foundations like Beethoven. He wasn't a natural violinist or anything like that, he was a pianist. So it's Albrechtsberger who brought out this assurance in orchestration for Field. Very important influence.
Well, well, well. Look at these lodgings.
Muzio! You're here. Come in. Let me get you a drink. Champagne?
Champagne for breakfast. Very well.
Hair of the dog for me. It was a late one last night.
St. Petersburg has been treating you well, John.
It has? Did you see the carriage outside? That's mine. I've come a long way from the days of being locked up in Hotel de Paris doing my own laundry in the bathtub.
You weren't locked up.
I was, in effect, when you refused to buy me a winter coat.
You would have only lost it like you did your hat on our way here. Anyway, we were only going to be here a few months.
And yet, here I am 4 years later, the toast of the town. I have not looked back since.
I know your notices have reached London. But what of the concerto and the quintetto you promised me? We should be publishing these. They will sell.
Who has time to write? I could be teaching day in and day out as it is. The public concerts sell out. I get 500 rubles a night playing private engagements.
And then there's the late nights.
Absolutely, there are late nights. When I think of being friendless in Vienna, not speaking a word of German and having no companion my own age, I shudder. I am now received in the Citizen Club and the English Club and in the homes of the gentry as if I was Muzio Clementi.
And you have your own carriage.
That's right. And I smoke Cuban cigars, and I have been known to light them with 100 ruble notes when I am insulted by a derisory fee.
But you have no time to compose.
Did I mention how charming the ladies are?
You need to put your life in order. You're clearly making a great deal of money, but look how disheveled you are. There's a demand for new compositions, and yet you spend your time carousing and chasing women.
I am not chasing women. I have students. You know this. I am selling your pianos and then teaching people how to play them. The people who want to play them happen to be women, and, naturally, they fall in love with me.
Have you entirely lost your ambition?
I am telling you, I am a celebrity here. What's more, I am going to Moscow next month to perform, and I assure you, I will be received there with even greater acclaim.
But no new music.
I am beginning to think you resent my success. You left me here in 1802, and you thought I would be lost without you, that I would scuttle back to London with my tail between my legs. But I survived and prospered. And now, when they talk of Clementi, it is as an acquaintance of Field.
I worry for you. I feel you're attempting to burn the candle at both ends, making money and spending it with equal abandon. I fear your indulgent ways are diminishing your talent.
Well, let us drown our sorrow at my abject failure with glasses of the finest champagne in Christendom. Cigar?
I'm Lyudmila Podlesnykh, a PhD student researching the life and work of Alexander Dubuque, the best student of John Field. John Field has his first public performance in St. Petersburg in 1804, and instantly he had a tremendous success. Even though Russian audience heard many European virtuosos before, John Field took the audience by his sweet tone, singing tone in his playing. Those Fieldian traditions of playing remained for a long time, even though after visiting Russia by Liszt, Clara Schumann, those romantic virtuosos, there was still Field's tradition very popular among Russian listeners.
Well, what do you think?
You know what I think. You are my best student.
I was referring to my new necklace.
I hardly noticed. I was watching you playing.
Really? I thought you were admiring my necklace. What else could you have been looking at?
Adelaide, if you insist on wearing that dress, you must expect my eyes to wander.
Good. Money well spent in that case. I just don't want you looking at other young ladies.
What other ladies?
Now, Jean, do not insult my intelligence. Everybody knows about your miscellaneous beaux.
I have many female students.
Yes? And what of that seamstress from the French opera in St. Petersburg?
She means nothing to me. We're finished.
So I am the only woman in your life?
Surely you must know that.
All I can conclude from your willingness to perform concerts with me is that you value my playing. Nothing more.
I love you, Percherette.
Don't say that if you don't mean it.
I do mean it. I think you're the only person in the world who understands me. Everyone else in Moscow, well, they're just dilettantes, but for you, music is a passion.
Jean, won't you write more music? Those short romances you compose, they're so beautiful.
Adelaide Percheron, will you marry me?
I think he's going to be a singer. Aren't you, Adrien?
He looks very like your father when he's screaming.
His namesake is a very dashing man.
And you look very happy. Are you?
I am. But I also wonder when I'll get to play again.
Darling, we played together only the other day.
Yes, after many years. It's all very well for men. You can father children and go off gallivanting the next day.
Percheret, I haven't been anywhere in years. I've been here with you. Maybe I should have gone. Maybe not touring Europe in 1816 or 17 was a missed opportunity. I should have taken advantage of my reputation and not loitered in Moscow.
Moscow adores you.
I think they appreciate loyalty. Perhaps another musician would have left the country after Napoleon laid waste to it. It's been a tough few years for Russia.
It's been a tough few years for us. For me.
I've been here. I haven't been going out. All I do is play and write. 5 concerti to date and all my nocturnes.
I still have to deal with the rumours.
But now we have a son. It's a new start.
Where are you going?
I was going to the English club to wet the baby's head.
This is the new start you're talking about?
I haven't left the house in weeks and I just want one drink with my friends. To celebrate the birth of our child.
Don't be late.
Good night, Adelaide. Are you coming back on stage for the encore?
That was a disaster.
They seem to like it.
You are drunk and you're an embarrassment. I am never playing with you again.
I am not drunk. And in any case,
I play better when I am drunk than anyone in Russia when they are sober.
Well, you can do so on your own, because I have had enough. I am leaving you, Jean.
Where are you going?
I am going to Smolensk, and I am taking Adrian with me. And you can go drink yourself into an early grave, since that is clearly your only goal in life.
Is that so? I am just a drunk? I just turned down the role of court pianist. I am planning a concert with Johann Hummel, maybe the greatest pianist in the world after me. And look, outside, another sold-out show. They weren't here for you.
When they call you Drunken John, it is because you are a drunk. And by the way, I know all about your little bastard, Leon. Don't look at me like that. Not every woman you consort with is an imbecile. I know you have a 6-year-old boy by that upper house whore. You barefaced liar.
What can I do about that now?
I don't care anymore.
Are you all right, Father?
It is a sad moment bidding farewell to an old friend.
Yes, of course. But I mean, physically, you could have declined to carry the coffin.
No, I couldn't. Clementi was more than my teacher. He was the father of the piano. It was a great honor to be his pallbearer.
There are so many people here, so many important people to fill such a large church.
This is not just a large church, Leonov. To be buried here, you have to be the King of England, Geoffrey Chaucer, or Muzio Clementi. Look at this scene. Westminster Abbey full of his family, his friends, and the greatest men in England lining up to pay their last respects.
You are a celebrated musician across Europe.
I was once, but I fear I've squandered my gifts. The creative spark is gone. My reputation is tarnished. I'm being superseded by upstarts like Frédéric Chopin. And look how I've devastated my family, all because of my love of the night.
I don't think any of that's true. Are you not performing throughout Europe with your son?
You're a good boy, Leonov. I hope you listened to Clementi when he told you not to take up any of my bad habits.
Come, Father, return with me to Paris. It is so gloomy here.
I was away from your grandmother so many years already. You must return to your studies, but I will not leave London while she is alive.
Nocturne number 9, note for note, the plagiarizing little milksop.
Sincerest form of flattery.
I should be getting a cut of the door. This place is packed to the rafters, and I get crowds that can barely fill a scullery. Shh! Shush yourself! Look at these Parisian sycophants, you dick. I wasn't playing in this exact style 30 years ago.
Chopin is all Paris has been talking about this year.
All this extravagant publicity, and he's nothing but a sick room talent. Shh! I'm coughing, damn it! If you can't hear him play over a cough, the problem is elsewhere.
Monsieur Field, you are drunk, and your manners this evening are in even greater disarray than your clothes.
Get out of my way, you pompous ass. I'm going to speak to the musician.
Father, that was Françoise Joseph-Petit, the most important music critic in the world.
I know who it was. Maybe he should devote his attention to dressmaking, as he seemed most concerned with my attire. Monsieur Chopin.
Mr. Field. Thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed the performance.
Very fine. I see a lot of me in you. Or rather, I hear a lot of me in you. I particularly enjoyed that new piece, Opus 9, Number 2. It sounded very familiar.
Ah, the Nocturne. Yes, that's proving very popular. You know, as a student, I used to practice your nocturnes. My old teacher was fond of assigning them as they were suitable for a child to play.
You've learned them very well. Almost too well.
Please excuse me. I must not neglect others here. But I look forward to attending your concert at the Conservatoire later in the season. Ah, Monsieur Fetty, I am glad you could make it.
Here is a young man who, taking no model, has found, if not a complete renewal of piano music, an abundance of original ideas of a kind to be found nowhere else.
Father, come let us leave. You're clearly unwell.
I am made unwell listening to all that drivel. Original ideas. After a night of unalloyed compositional and performative mimicry.
Maybe we should return to Russia. Silent life in Paris is clearly aggravating you. And your health has only declined since grandmother died.
They dismiss me because I don't flounce around the city like a perfumed dandy. Chopin, what is he but a writer of mazurkas? And tonight his playing was insipid and barely audible.
You see, you're making yourself sick with agitation.
I am going to play Paris and make them remember who was first and who is the best.
If we take the nocturnes as an example, you know, the right hand for the most part has the singing line, it has the lovely melody. The left hand is fulfilling an accompanimental role, so it's therefore in a secondary position. But the quality of the writing and its chromaticism, for example, would suggest that Field was experimenting with how to sustain sound and how to move harmony in a smooth way. And this can only be done really effectively by having a good legato pedal. It's interesting to look at the structure of the pieces from that point of view. He's essentially setting out to develop the nocturne, and it certainly paves the way for Chopin. I mean, you know, there's this whole myth of him inventing the nocturne. He didn't, but there are certainly models from which Chopin may or may not have actually studied and used, because Chopin's nocturnes are more developed. There's no question, they're more developed than Field's. But Field, he sort of defines the nocturne for the first time.
I thought the interval would never come. It is sad to see how he has degenerated. His playing lacks the strength of the modern school.
He is unwell. How can we judge him in this weakened state?
Unfortunately, he is yesterday's man. Forgive the pun, but he should leave the field clear for Chopin.
Please. Where Field smiles, Chopin makes a grinning grimace. Where Field sighs, Chopin groans.
Ludwig, I suggest you save this disquisition for publication. Chopin is approaching.
Monsieur Rastab, Monsieur Fetty.
Monsieur Chopin, how are you enjoying the concert?
I am leaving. I cannot listen any longer. It is disheartening to hear a once great man reduced to this. There is no speed, no elegance, and he is incapable of executing difficulties. In a word, feeble.
Monsieur Chopin, I'm delighted you could come. Are you enjoying the show?
Good evening, Leonov. I will be frank with you. I have the greatest respect for your father, and have always taken it as the highest of compliments that my touch is compared to his. But tonight, he is not at his best.
Leonov, Paris in 1832 is no place for the venerable. It is a place of novelty, and present company excluded, empty virtuosity.
What are you saying?
I am saying, let me hold a dinner, and I will invite the luminaries of the city to come and honor your father.
And what is the function of this dinner?
Must you ask?
It is a farewell.
Thank you. Thank you. I know I said my concert in March would be my last one of 1836, but I simply could not see out the year without gathering with you once again. After 30 years, there is no question but Moscow is my home, and you are my family. And you have to spend Christmas with your family. I will play for you now, but I won't play for long because I would rather spend my night tonight talking and laughing with you.
And drinking with us.
Indeed, Leonov, there is a strong possibility of that, my son. But I have chosen one short piece tonight that I thought fitting. When you reach the end of the year, you reflect on what has happened and what you've done. When I think back on what I've done, perhaps I have drunk too much. Perhaps I have had too many long nights. But I can say, whatever I've done, it was for love. I've loved playing for you. I've loved teaching you this instrument that has been my constant companion. And I loved writing my concerti and my nocturnes. All right. I understand that means I am talking too much. I will play a nocturne, and in the spirit of bidding farewell to the old and embracing the new, I would like to play something from the new generation. I would like to play a piece by a young man who has taken what I started and made it his own. I would like to play you something by Frédéric Chopin.
Where's my father?
He is in his bed.
Father, I left St. Petersburg as soon as I heard you were sick.
Leonov, I am so happy you are here.
He has been drifting in and out. We are very worried.
Father, you're sweating. Let me wipe your brow.
Thank you. But don't kiss me. It is the sweat of death. I'm dying. And it's for the best.
John, we are all here. Your friends are beside you, and the city is praying for you. But I think we should have someone come and administer last rites. Who should I call?
Leonov, hold my hand.
John, are you Catholic? Are you a Calvinist?
No, I am a pianist.
He was buried in Moscow, and on his headstone it reads, in English, John Field, born in Ireland in 1782, died in Moscow in 1837. This was erected in his memory by his grateful friends and scholars.
If you look at his catalogue, there is a huge amount of reprinted editions of his work. Sometimes people would print something and they won't come out again. So his works are printed over and over again because there's a demand for them. He has composed 7 concerti. He was probably one of the better household names in Europe for music. Maybe he could have worked harder, maybe he could have toured more. But then again, it reminds me of Milan Kundera, who says that we can only compare one life at a time. You'd need several lives in order to know this. So we can say that maybe he would have been better. I think he seems very fulfilled and very complete to work with Clementi, to have Rachmaninoff's grandfather and Tolstoy's mother on his list, to have Pushkin contribute to his tombstone, to still be quite well known in Russia, and even to get this retrospective accolade as inventor of the nocturne. So I don't think he had an unfulfilled life when he died, not at all.
John Field is the father of Russian piano school of playing. He established the methods and principles which were passing through 19th century into the 20th century through his student Alexander Dubuque, Sergei Rachmaninoff, Alexander Scriabin, and other pianists. Even myself, when I used to study in 1980s, I was taught by the methods of John Field. My technical exercises were the same as they were written by Alexander Dubuque. This is still a foundation of piano technique for the musicians, even up to now and nowadays in conservatories in Russia.
John Field was the product of the golden age of music in Dublin, where it was possible to have extraordinary teachers and great performances and be nurtured in your home city. After that, Field's great legacy is in his innovative piano music. He wrote music that was interesting to other composers, to the Chopins, the Schumanns, the Liszt. And these composers that have since probably eclipsed Field owe a great debt to Field in terms of the music that they were then to write. He was also, as a performer, the most noted performer of the piano of his generation. And that's an incredible thing to say. Field was a trailblazer for us in that way, and we should be very grateful to him.
And I would like to finish with my nocturne number 13 in D minor, also known as Dernière Pensée, or Last Thoughts.
Last Thoughts was written and directed by Mark Ivan O'Gorman and featured, in order of appearance, performances by Alan Smith, Dennis Kulikoff, Anthony Scordi, Jen McGurk, Richard Shelton, John Hickey, Max Hendrickson, Mark Ivan O'Gorman, and Zane Hudson. The dramatization was recorded and edited by Brian Wallace. Incidental music was performed by Derek Cronin. Production assistant was Federica Sanchez Samperi. Sound design and mixing by David Ayres. Last Thoughts is a Cleverality production for RTE Lyric FM with funding from the Broadcast Authority of Ireland's Sound and Vision Fund.
Last Thoughts, The Life and Music of John Field, was produced by Mark Ivan O'Gorman. The programme was a Cleverality production for RTE Lyric FM. John Field was played by Alan Smith, and the other actors in the production were Anthony Scordi, Jen McGurk, Richard Shelton, Dennis Kulikoff, Max Hendrickson, John Hickey, Zane Hudson, and Mark Ivan O'Gorman. Sound design and mixing was by David Ayres. The drama sound recordist was Brian Wallace, and the production assistant was Federica Sanchez Samperi. Last Thoughts was written and directed by Mark Ivan O'Gorman.